Yeah, how do I sound, Mr. Wayne? The level's correct. I'm just trying to keep it kosher. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, yo, check this out. Drive around town, top down, black Benzo. Of course, I'm blasting my HD radio. Monday through Friday, 8 to 11. My dial's locked on that hot talk station. Tim Conway Jr., his show's so great. OG Valley Stud repping 818. Been hearing forever how is that so good, but you won't find a dude who's less Hollywood. At 97.1, I'm his biggest fan, but he still needs a partner. Yeah, I said it, man. Hey, Jerry, cue up that big red mic. Make it hot. Let the stud start the show.
And we have Jerry, please.
What did I do? Did I do something
mighty
bad?
Jerry, please. What'd you do? You turned the mics on? What happened there, buddy?
No, I turned the thing on. He was, like, Macadocious was still rapping, and I turned it off.
Ba-boo.
And I thought you saw it, and then you kept talking.
Oh, man. I tell you, you got to concentrate in there, buddy. Because that's one of the easiest jobs on the planet, is sitting in there. All right, folks, it is the Tim Conway Jr. Show. We're live on 97.1 Free FM, and joining us, one of the biggest producers in Hollywood.
I don't know if we go that far.
Yeah, David Landsberg. Nice to see you, man.
How are you?
I'm doing excellent. I'm doing great.
I'm so glad. Big, I don't know. I'm 5'3".
Well, listen, you went. You produced a Blossom, Herman's Head, the John Larroquette Show, Cosby. You're on a head writer on Cosby, The Love Boat. I mean, you know, you've done a lot of things in show business.
I've been lucky.
And remarkably, you've survived through all those years and didn't get thrown out on your ass because you're more conservative than Hollywood.
Well, I am. And I'm amazed I haven't been thrown out. But actually, I have kept my mouth shut. Oh, am I okay? Oh, I have to get closer
to the
mic.
Okay, right there.
I get any closer. Okay.
Yeah, but you had to keep your mouth shut earlier on, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Not anymore, though.
Be
huh?
a good boy. Be a good boy and take the money. And
right.
Do what they say. Like when I was working for Cosby, I would not necessarily disagree with him, but if he decided not to do a script, in you know, you'd worked 2-3 months on something, he looked at it, he goes, "I don't think we're doing this." He folded over, he put his elbow on it. That would be the end of the show, and then he'd do whatever he wants.
Right.
You know what? For a writer, that kind of hurts. But for somebody who has a divorce and 2 children in alimony,
right?
Fine. Fine. Whatever you say, Dr. Cosby.
That's exactly right.
Once I did get a little upset, and I stood up and I said, "I know you're the boss. I know you're a brilliant comedian. But let me tell you something. I think you're a genius."
Yeah, it is tough. I know a couple of friends who are conservative and not, you know, rabid Republicans.
Yeah, I'm not, yeah.
They're just not you know, far left wing nuts anymore. But they said you really have to still nowadays, even 2008, you got to watch what you say.
Absolutely.
You know, there are a lot of people in show business who, like, for instance, if you come out and you say you're conservative, I don't think you're going to get a job on the new movie about George Bush called W.
I don't think so.
Not going to hire. Although they could throw you in as like a Dick Cheney, huh?
No? I don't know if I can make that kind of funny. I really don't know about that. It's not necessarily that you want to write something that might be pro-war or anything like that.
Right.
It's just that sometimes they get so cutting in their humor and stuff. You go, "Well, I don't know if, should we put that in?" And they look at you like, "Of course we put that in. You know, the hell with Bush or whoever it may be."
Right.
I will say I've been retired now for 7 years from working for other people.
Good for you.
And
since the heart attack?
Since 2 years before the heart attack.
Oh, is that right?
Yes. Because my father died a month before he was supposed to retire.
Oh, bah, boom.
So
that's the way I want to go.
Is it really?
Yeah.
No, I'd like to
month
die.
Before I should retire, I want to have a massive heart attack.
20 years after I retire, I'd like to do that. But I did have it after I retired. But what happened basically is I had turned a script in to a studio, and the executive looked at it, and he looked at me. And basically it was about a single father who's raising his kind of wild, out-of-control son.
Right.
And he said to me, "You know what, David, I got to tell you. This just isn't what I was thinking." To which I said to him, "I know. I wrote it." Now, If it was what you were thinking, you would have written it.
All right, but you got to tell us this the Vietnam story.
I knew you were going to say, okay.
All right, because now you served in Vietnam.
Yes, I did.
For how many years? How many tours?
I was there one tour, 1 year.
All right, 1 year.
Well, I was there May 67 through May 68.
So and you saw some action.
I did. I was there for the Tet Offensive.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow. All right.
And so I say action, don't look at me as Audie Murphy running and attacking the Germans.
Right.
I was hiding as best I could behind the wall so I wasn't being killed.
Right. But you were on the front lines.
At that time, yes.
Wow.
But not for the year. I was a signalman.
Right.
I was a cryptographer. Can you imagine that? I'm a little guy from Brooklyn, and next thing you know, I'm sitting in the middle of Vietnam with a top secret clearance in the middle of a place called Parachute. I did communications for the 173rd Airborne and stuff, and basically I coded and decoded messages.
Is that right?
If there was a movie, I'd be the guy to run in to Nicolas Cage and go, "Sir, a message."
Right.
And then run out again.
And you were decoding the Vietnamese messages?
Some of them, but mostly
ours.
I was decoding ours. They'd come in, they'd give us, attack points and things, and I'd...
All right, so you come back from Vietnam.
Yes, I did.
And you wrote a pilot, is that right?
Yes, I did.
And you take it into, we won't say what studio.
I will not.
Okay, but you take it into one of the major studios.
Yes.
All right.
And being the only, I don't know, if there's other Vietnam veterans out there in situation comedy, give us a call. I'd like to say hi. But we sat around, boy, I can't believe I'm telling this story on the air. Ooh. We sat around and... every one of the executives kind of was my age around there. I'm going back now about 15 years.
Right, okay.
Everyone in the studio executive, the studio executives, other people, the two executive, quote-unquote, executive non-writing producers, and the president of the network.
And they're all in the same room.
All in the same room, and everybody was talking about Vietnam, and everybody had a joke about how they got out of the army.
Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, one guy would say, I got my doctor wrote me a letter, to say that I couldn't hear, and somebody did this, my uncle did this, or somebody said, they feigned blindness or, hysterical blindness.
Right.
And I just sat there and I kind of listened and I just felt a little like, gee, I'm...
And you were the only guy in the room that went.
I was drafted. And again, please, I was drafted.
Right.
I was no hero.
He didn't sign up.
I didn't sign up. They said, you got to go. I was drafted actually with my mother.
Wow.
Dragging her behind me as they took me to the bus.
Did she make it to Parachute with you?
Actually, no. But she did send us salamis a lot. She did. But at what I found was they decided to go ahead with the project, and only one person was taken off the project.
And that's you.
That was me.
Jesus Christ.
The only guy.
Writing a pilot about Vietnam, the only guy that went to Vietnam, and you were taken off the project.
I was taken off the project, and they sat there and go, we're really sorry. And, the two non-writing executive producers went, we're... And then eventually, because it was kind of a Biloxi Blues kind of comedy.
Right.
We drafted. Right. We were regular guys. We were at Jones Beach one day, and the next day, bullets. So, it's...
It is odd. But, it's pretty typical of Hollywood, though, that, they'll... Or maybe not anymore, but maybe back, 15 years ago, when they design a comedy, and let's say they do, a black comedy... And there's all white writers.
All white writers.
Yeah. And they're like, well, how did that fail? I'm like, well, I don't know. I don't know why the black audience didn't relate to all the white guys writing it.
This is the truth. I don't know. I think it was William Goldman said, no one knows anything. And we don't.
Yeah. William Goldman also said that, didn't he also say that, was it William Goldman? Who wrote Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid?
William Goldman.
He said that some guy came up to him once and said, I think it was his famous line, that crime doesn't pay. And he says, yeah, well, if it didn't pay, it wouldn't exist. crime is profitable to a lot of people, a lot of people in the crime business. All right, folks, David Landsberg is with us, and your opportunity to out yourself as a conservative in show business. I don't care
and
whether
you don't got to be. You don't have to be
a Republican. You just have to be. You know, you could be. You should be a Republican, yeah. But not a radical conservative. We're not talking about the far right wing.
You could be a Joe Lieberman kind
of
guy.
Yes, exactly. Joe Lieberman, who's a Democrat, yet he's supporting John McCain. But if you're in craft services, you're a writer, you're a producer, you're an actor, you're a director, whatever you do in show business, an opportunity finally to say, I'm here. I'm queer. Get over it. All right, that's a different thing.
I don't know. Yeah, you might want to take that out.
All right. Here are the phone numbers. 520-9710 for all you conservatives in show business.
Do you
still have to hide it in show business?
This is wild. By the way, I have a play. Oh, you want to take that number?
Let me give the phone number, and then we'll talk about that play you got going, the Acts of Love. 520-9710. That's our main number here in Southern California. 520-9710. And 888-520-9710. Now, you weren't always a conservative, is that correct? Were you back in college or when you first came?
Back in college, I didn't care about politics.
You didn't go to college.
Well, I did. I flunked out, actually. I flunked out of Hofstra. Did you really?
Yeah, nice to see you.
Good.
A lot of guys in radio will say the same thing.
I flunked out of college because I really didn't care about college.
Yeah, I didn't flunk out, but I left. I mean,
they actually asked me to.
Oh, they asked you to pull out, huh?
So I say, really nice talking to you. You can leave now. And I was drafted 3 months later.
Oh, is that right?
Right. So Jesus I learned
Christ.
Again.
How long was boot camp before you went into Vietnam?
Eight weeks.
8 weeks.
8 weeks boot camp, and then 3 months of coding school. You know,
right.
Communications.
Now, before you went into Vietnam, were you like a morning guy? Were you up in the morning, and or were you just like one of these guys who dropped out of college and liked to smoke weed?
There was no smoking weed then.
Did you smoke weed over in Vietnam?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Fabulous. Fabulous.
But wasn't everybody smoking? Isn't that how you got by over
there?
That's
exactly right. The guy who had me, because
You never smoked weed in your life?
No.
And then you went to Vietnam, the Viet Cong are shooting at you, and you take a joint and take a couple of hits.
Wow, man.
That's really good, huh?
That's really good. His name was, I was a private first class, and his name was Richard DeNegris. And, oh, my God, I said his name. Richard, are you out there? Thanks for the join. And Richard, we were sitting out there, and there was actually a couple of mortars dropping. We can't use that term.
I'm sorry. We can say stuff, but you can't say the whole S word.
So it was pretty good.
And you got high the first time?
Yeah, I also, then you put some glue in a sock, and you put it in your mouth. Now, I'm not saying everybody in Vietnam did this. There, and this is the truth, I was lucky. I was lucky to get some good duty. I was lucky to, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I pulled bunker duty. I pulled guard duty. I pulled jungle trail. But I never, for whatever reason, got hurt. But the other guys, the guys that went out there, and the guys that was called humping, and they were humping out there, let me tell you something. They deserve a big hug if you ever find somebody.
Oh, still nowadays. Yeah, absolutely.
You bet.
Yeah.
I mean, they really did. And they were drafted. They didn't have to go. I mean, they didn't have to join up. And it's really, nobody's ever really done anything about, you know, a guy who's, you're at Jones Beach one day.
Right, yeah.
The next day, you're on a bus to South Carolina with a lot of people.
Jesus Christ. All right, gang, if you're a conservative, David Landsberg's with us. He's a big producer in town. And
Not anymore.
Yeah, not anymore. but he worked on Blossom, Herman's Head, Tim Mayle, very funny writer.
Tim Mayle, a very funny writer. Herman's Head really was, you know, I also did these kind of crazy movies in Italy for a while, and then I realized I wasn't an Italian movie star, and I worked on Blossom. Don Rhea was the executive producer, and I don't want to take that. He was also the executive producer of the John Larroquette Show, and I worked as a writer-producer for him. But Herman's Head, I was the head writer, executive producer.
Look at you.
I don't want to make it like those shows.
Please, you got to take as much credit as possible for all this crap.
But Don Rhea was, I met him when I was, as an actor, I was Rhoda's blind date, and Steve the Weasel Miller, and Don Rhea wrote that episode, and we became friends. And
excellent. All right, gang.
Credit where credit is due.
Again, it's there's a movement in Hollywood right now, and we can't talk about it in too much detail.
No.
But there is a group of people who are very successful in Hollywood and have come out recently in like the last year or so and said that they were conservative. And these are people you would know. I'm not going to, you know, mention their names because they'll tell you when they, you know, when they're good and ready to tell
exactly.
you. But there are some major names of major producers, major writers, and actors who have all sort of gotten together and said, "Hey, listen, enough of being in the closet. As a conservative, you can still be successful in Hollywood and talk about your political beliefs."
And the truth is, even if you become not successful. Hopefully you have enough money, but you know there does come a point where you can't be quiet anymore.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, David Landsberg is again a he's worked on Blossom, Herman's Head, John Larroquette, and Cosby, and has come out and said, "Yeah, I'm a conservative, and I you know, what are you going to do about it?" All right, here are the phone numbers.
Gang. No, I want to get beat up
for people in show business. Who are conservative, do you still have to hide? You still have to watch what you say? Or can you, has it changed a little? 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. Let's talk to Marvin in Irvine. You're on 97.1
oh,
Free
cool.
FM. How are you?
Hey, doing great. How about you guys?
All right,
good.
Man.
Good to hear. My father was a Vietnam vet as well. So,
God bless him. Give him a hug for me.
The second I see him, give him a hug. Same thing, just normal guy, just drafted, brought him out there.
Right.
But, hey, I go to a film school in Southern California.
Right.
And, you want liberal in Hollywood, then you go to a film school, you're gonna get liberal times five. I'm a conservative. These kids, they come up with, I'm an editor, they come up with these just anti-war short films. And I need work, so I'll cut them.
That's exactly right.
I am biting through my tongue.
You know what?
Yeah, it must be tough to cut those, huh?
Do you have
so bad.
You have a family?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, now I want you to listen to me. All right?
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
There are four types of artists.
Okay.
The first one, starving. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, when you're a starving artist, you have to get something to eat, so you'll do just about anything. That leads you to your second struggling artist, because once you eat, now the real battle begins. You then, when you have children, a wife, a family, or a husband, whatever it is, a family,
yeah.
You then become a commercial artist. You do, and you work at the behest of the Medicis. There are the Michelangelos, the Medicis. Do you know that Michelangelo hated painting?
Is that right?
He hated, and he hated cherubs. And he hated frescoes, and he especially...
Pretty good at doing some for some he hated.
And he especially hated painting on his back. But that's what
the
they... Right? That's what they had him do. Why?
And what was the fourth artist?
Because he wanted to be the fourth artist.
Which is?
A true artist to himself. He wanted to be a sculptor. He loved sculpting. That was his real joy. And so, he did what was asked of him till the time he could do what he wanted to. If you have a family, if you have...
So if you have a family, you're like a corporate artist.
You better. You
yeah.
better.
All right, that's interesting. I never heard that before, but that makes sense. Starving artist is first, then struggling.
Right.
Then sort of a corporate guy, a corporate artist.
Somebody.
Like myself.
Well, no different. I did commercials. I did hundreds of commercials. I even did, not that I was very proud of this, but I even did a commercial against Cesar Chavez. I represented the grape growers.
Oh, jeez.
I did it. I did it. You know why I did it? I had a little girl, and my wife was pregnant again with a second child,
right.
And I needed
yeah.
the money.
Absolutely.
So,
hey,
thank you
for calling, buddy.
Hey, thanks so much. And you know what? Do what you got to do. Save your money. Don't get crazy. And then when you're still young enough, do what you want.
Yeah, but that's interesting. Starving, struggling, corporate, and then a true artist. And the true artists are, I mean, you can name a few of them. Some of the big actors are true artists.
Yes.
You know, like a Tom Cruise, he can do what he wants.
He can do what he wants. Actually, even though I don't agree with him, Sean Penn is a true artist.
Right. And there's a lot of, you know, the Rolling Stones.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of music groups that are, you know, huge that are true artists.
David Mamet.
Right. And some comedians, too.
Yeah.
Seinfeld, Leno, Letterman, true artists.
Yes, but not...
They don't have to do anything.
I know, yes, but not when they were beginning, I promise you.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. As a matter of fact, you always hear stories of how, you know, they were starving. These guys like Jay Leno and Letterman, you know, would hang out at the Comedy Store and, you know, not have enough money to eat.
Billy Ray Cyrus is a very nice guy. I put him on when I was doing The Love Boat.
Right.
I was executive producer of The Love Boat with that sweet Robert Urich, who was a doll, when it went back to UPN. In any case, I was doing Love Boat, and we put Billy Ray on as an actor, and I had him sing a couple of songs. And we went out to dinner, and he's the sweetest, sweetest guy you ever met in your life. But you know what? He had a pretty harsh time. He slept in his car for a while out. He was a used car salesman in L.A.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
He really,
get that good.
He really worked and did what he had to do.
Yeah. Well, but it does make sense. Then when you're struggling, you got enough money for food. You got enough money to, you know, maybe pay for a car.
Maybe have a car and
yeah.
stuff.
And you know, the electric bill.
Right, but you're not going to get a woman to go.
No, she ain't coming over.
She ain't coming over.
And then when you become a corporate artist, that means you're making between $100,000 and $300,000 a year.
How about this? $60,000. Yeah.
All right. And but then when you become the real true artist, that's when the money comes in.
That's right.
Yeah. So folks, and again, this is David Landsberg's with us. He's a very popular and very successful producer in Hollywood. And did you come up with the scale yourself?
Yes.
And that I've never heard it defined like that, but it really makes a lot of sense.
Well, it's kind of where I, you know, kind of came from. I mean, I was Hector Projector for public broadcasting. They dressed me as a big projector. I had these little arms.
Was that during the struggling or starving phase?
Struggling. starving. Oh, my God. Starving was dinner theater. Because not only did I have to do the shows and stuff,
right.
you know, I had to wait tables. So many times I'd be on stage and I go, holy moly, isn't that a waiter?
So. All right. Well, let's take some, we got to take a break here. We'll come back with more of your phone calls.
You know, I was Mr. Whipple's assistant for three
commercials.
Know
that.
Yeah,
I didn't know that. All right, David Landsberg's with us. He is a conservative. He has the balls to say, yes, I am.
And a Vietnam veteran.
Yes, and a Vietnam vet. And there's a big movement in Hollywood. A lot of very successful guys. I'm not going to tell you their names, but if I told you, I could rattle off five names right now that everybody would know.
Yes, I'm sure.
And I know that they're all conservative dudes. All right, when you're working in Hollywood nowadays, it's still a pain in the ass to be conservative. 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. It's the Tim Conway Jr. Show, and David Landsberg's with us. We're live at 97.1 Free FM.
Can I talk about my play?
I'm here, I'm queer, get over it. All right, welcome back, everybody. This is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 Free FM. David Landsberg joins us.
Hi.
He is a very successful producer in town.
Raconteur.
Yes. Blossom, Herman's Head, John Larroquette Show, and
mostly
much
writing
more.
On those two.
Yeah, well, you don't have to give up the ghost.
Well,
everyone knows that you always got to say you created him.
No, that was Don Rio.
off the air.
Okay.
David tells me differently. He's like, yeah, I create all that stuff. All right. Conservative in Hollywood, you still have to stay in the closet, or can you pop your head out once in a while? Here are the phone numbers, 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. Let's talk to Ron here in Torrance. Ron, you're on 97.1 Free FM. How are you?
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you brought this up. I've been an illustrator and a production designer for 28 years.
Is that
right? A talented man.
Look at
you.
Yeah,
and I wanted to say a couple things. Now, talk about being conservative, okay? I'm working designing the Indian movie that goes in the Smithsonian square there, the new Smithsonian Indian
wow.
Museum, okay?
Right.
Now, the guy who's the director there, he's an Indian.
Right.
And I tell him, this is when we first went to Iraq, I said, well, you know, I'm not really down on Iraq because I think that Saddam Hussein's got to go and da-da-da-da. And
right.
This guy looks at me and goes, yeah, you know what? What you guys did to us Indians, man, I am really pissed off, and George Bush is the worst. My last day on the job.
They fired you, or you split?
Yeah. No, they fired me.
Isn't that? Well, there's
unbelievable.
You know what I found out about, and that's so
terrible.
Yeah,
but you know how miserable you'd have been working on that, Ron?
Yeah, well, but listen, I wanted to go on because I wanted to say something about the commercialism and everything like that. I think that commercial art is the art of the century, and
yes, I
love doing commercial art. And you take the Norman Rockwells, Dean Cornwells, and us illustrators in the film business and stuff. I think we are the leading edge.
I think that and you're absolutely correct. And in music, in symphonic music, most of our beautiful music today comes from music scores like Gladiator, if you ever heard that.
Oh, absolutely.
They're brilliant
scores. You're absolutely right.
Seabiscuit, Rudy, I mean, these
are... Oh, Seabiscuit, wait a minute. I think I saw that one.
Did you?
Yeah. But, you know, the interesting thing in film scores is that most film scores are, I'd say the majority are heavily influenced by the Impressionist music, the classic music of Debussy and Ravel.
Wow.
Yeah, and
wish I was intelligent enough to say yeah.
Yeah, well, I have no idea what you're talking about. I just know Seabiscuit won.
Well, if you listen to Gustav Holst's The Planets,
yes,
you will hear in The Planets almost every romantic theme that is in modern music.
Are you serious?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Was your radio broken? Were you listening to NPR and you just happened to jump onto the station?
No, I'm just a guy that loves...
You're allowed, if your conservatives are allowed to love beautiful music.
I know, but this guy is much more intelligent than most of the people I've met.
And he's a talented
listener to the station, including
me. And I'm Italian.
All right, Bobby, thank you for calling, Ronnie.
Wait a minute, tu parla italiano?
There he goes. All right, let's talk to Drew in Los Angeles, 97.1 Free FM. How are you?
Holy cow, this is an interesting topic. Here's my feeling about this. It is an interesting topic, but I feel like this conservatism rap is bugging me a little bit because, first of all, what's conservative about this industry? I mean, physically, it's not very conservative. Morally, it hasn't really been known to be conservative. And programs like the Endowment of the Arts that are very liberal are what help schools have money to have music programs and audiovisual programs.
Yeah, these
supported by Democrats.
Yeah,
by liberal.
I know. But, dude, ultimately, it's a business. And when you put out four or five films, like the last couple of films,
sure,
like Lions for Lambs and the Valley of Ella, these films, you know, the Valley Lions for Lambs cost $35 million to make. And it only made $13 million. And you had Tom Cruise in there, Robert Redford, and who was the actress in
there? They could have done really a lot of good with that money.
Well, but anyway, if you know, you keep making these films that nobody shows up to, then you know they have to explain to their stockholders because still it is a business. I mean, you know, the big corporations like Disney and CBS, I mean, they have to answer to their stockholders.
And when you
start making, you know, a lot of movies that don't make any money, like who the hell is going to go see this movie W about George Bush? The people who hate him aren't going to go see it because they already hate him. And the people that like him aren't going to go see it because they think it's all lies.
Yeah.
So are you saying that if there was more conservatism in Hollywood, we'd have fewer ridiculous films that nobody
no.
wants to
yes,
watch?
I absolutely think so, yes.
He may
what
think
that.
Saying?
Is
I,
that what you think?
I absolutely think so,
well,
yes.
Well, that's what he thinks. I don't necessarily think there would be less or anything like that, but I think there would be a nicer balance to what is out there.
Yeah, but I think that supports what I'm saying. Like back when, you know, in World War II and, you know, World War I, and even, you know, the Korean War for the most part, there are a lot of pro-U.S. films out there, you know, during, you know, those campaigns. During the Vietnam War, I don't remember any. And especially during this war, I don't remember any. And if you put one out there where the United States was the good guy, and can you tell me one, by the way, Drew?
Where the United States is, you know, the hero.
Letters to Iwo Jima, I think, is where...
About World War II, if anything.
Yeah, but anything about the Iraq War or Vietnam?
Oh, I missed the first part.
Even
of that.
Korea.
Honestly, I couldn't name one right now. Go
That's
ahead.
Right.
Yeah, but why is that? I mean, why wouldn't they, you know, a studio would be silly not to try one and
so
see if it made
direct,
any money.
Yeah, that's a direct reflection of how completely insanely liberal Hollywood is, and thus they won't put something like that out. But if they did, Branson, Missouri would eat it up with a spoon.
Very, yeah, that's exactly
and
right.
They'd make tons
there's
of money,
a,
too.
I believe there
we
is
We really
a,
want those people to be... Okay, never mind.
They're part of
yeah,
us.
Yeah, but they're part
they're
of this part country. Of,
they are.
You know? Let me tell you something. Were you in the service, or have you ever done any kind of service, national service or anything?
I don't think so. No,
okay.
Not that kind.
I'll give you, when I was drafted with the rest of the country. Now, even though I was from New York and everything like that, I was suddenly with everybody else. I remember being against, and this is, this was, in 1968. I'm against, and again, I was a very lucky soldier. I did not get killed. I was in very, in reality, I had 90% of the best duty there was.
Look, that was a rude thing that I said about Branson, Missouri, but what I'm trying
to No, that's okay, but I want to say to you that I'm laying on a wall in the mud with this African-American soldier from the Airborne, and we were huddling together as literally this, and this is, you know, my only day in combat. So I'm terrified, and I am hugging this guy, terrified. And I looked at him, and I thought to myself, well, I guess we're pretty equal now.
Right. Yeah.
Because, well, because the situation brought us together, and we became very good friends.
Yeah, but, you know, but, but it, situations like that do bring America together. Like 9/11 brought everybody together. And for a while there, you know, we were experiencing, you know, the approval around the world at some 80, you know, 85%.
Can I bring some of it? Because I like this, I like this, this call. It's interesting. We're on the 19th anniversary. We're going into the 20th anniversary of the oil spill in Alaska. Now, I don't know.
The Exxon Valdez?
Yeah. Now, I don't know what other people did, but I sat down as a conservative and said, I am part of this problem. I live in Southern California. They don't let us drill for oil in Santa Barbara Channel. They don't let us drill for oil. They don't let us do these things. So why mess our beaches up? We'll just mess up their beaches. So I felt responsibility. I called and I said, what can I do? And they said, come on up.
And you went up and helped
so
clean up?
I went up for 2 weeks.
Is that right?
Yes. Yeah, so I went to Seward, Alaska, and I worked at the Otter Rescue Center. And I thought
we can't use that S word.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm sorry again.
Yeah,
I cleaned
okay.
up otter poop for. Sorry.
That's okay.
I keep doing that. It's a bad word for me. And I worked and I did something. I met the most wonderful people from all over this country that came to volunteer. We slept and it. Let me tell you something. Alaska, even in June, is freezing, and it's beautiful, but everybody came to do stuff, and they did it because they wanted to. And I had people from North Carolina, we had people from Kansas, we had people from, you know, Hawaii. They came from all over, and
clean up otter crap, huh?
To clean up. Yeah. There was, and you know something, not every one of them.
They pay you to do this?
No. Yeah. You had to pay your own dime there. We were sleeping in the, you know, at the Air Force Base, sleeping in tents.
Jesus.
I was sleeping in the back room of some place.
All right, we got to go here. So let me give out this.
I'm sorry. Thanks for that call.
Let me give out this, your play here so people can go to this. March 26th through April 27th. There's a play called An Act of Love.
Right.
And it's at the Falcon Theater, the world premiere of a new comedy.
A conservative writing theater.
Wow, look at you. Go see the play. It's on, weekday, weekends? When is this?
It just starts Wednesday through Sunday.
Oh, I see. Okay. Wednesday
Falcon
through
theater.
Sunday.
You can go to falcontheater.com, Falcon Theater.
8 p.m. and then Sunday matinees at 4 p.m. Call the box office, 818-955-8101.
It's a wonderful show. It's about a man and three women in his life. Actually, in it, he's a regular guy. I don't get too...
Sounds like Three's Company.
No. It's his mother.
All right. Well, okay. All right. Call this number, 818-955-8101. David Landsberg. Thank you for stopping by, David.
Are you kidding? Thank
you. You're a major stud and the biggest guy in Hollywood. The biggest guy going, man.
You're a dub.
All
Thanks
right,
so
gang.
Much.
David Landsberg.
Thank
it is the
you.
Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 Free FM. All right, welcome back, everybody. It is the Tim Conway Jr. Show live at 97.1 Free FM. And, geez, what an interesting guy that is, that David Landsberg, man. He had to split, but an awfully, awfully entertaining guy. I would say two of the best segments we've ever done here on this show. Don't you agree? 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. Hey, Mark and Colton, you're on 97.1 Free FM. How are you, dude?
Hey, Tim. Jim.
Yes, sir.
Hey, dude. You know, I got I love your show.
Thank you.
Love
thank
you,
you sir. Thank
I mean,
you.
I mean, you're a funny dude, but one of the best two segments you ever had?
I'm sorry?
Who are you kidding?
I'm sorry?
What the F was that? I still don't know who the guy was, first of all. Secondly...
That's David Landsberg.
Yeah, but, I mean, who's heard of that? And secondly...
He's a big producer. He produced Blossom and Herman's Head, John Larroquette. He's a big guy,
this
dude.
Play?
Cosby?
What play? The play's going to suck. The
what?
Guy's talking about... I mean, you got to love him. He was in the war. You got to respect that and everything.
Right.
But, I mean... Besides that, he's cleaning up otter poop in Alaska? I mean, what are you guys talking about? Tim, I mean, this is supposed to be a funny show, dude.
You got a point there, I guess. But no, I thought the guy was very entertaining. I thought he was one of the best guests we've had on our show.
One of the best guests? Dude, what are you smoking? I want some whatever you're smoking, man.
I thought he was great. F you. All right, you can kiss my ass, Mark. Let's talk to a Bill in Los Angeles. You're on 97.1. How are you?
Tim, I got to agree with that guy. That segment was horrible.
What?
No one knows who this guy is. And where's the yucks? I listen to your show to laugh. And
what?
I hear about being conservative in Hollywood with this guy that nobody's ever heard of. Come on, where's the laughs? Where's the
how
joke?
How dare you people?
Come on,
this is a Vietnam vet you're talking about.
Who gives an F?
You have and no respect, you young punks.
He wasn't funny. This whole segment wasn't funny. This is one of the
I thought it was hysterical.
Heard.
I thought the guy was funny as hell. I thought he's like having George Carlin in here for two segments.
Oh, F you two. I'm going to listen to KFI.
Oh, get the Christ out of here. That was one of the best. Jesus, I must be off my rocker here. I thought that was like the best two segments the station's ever produced. That reminded me of the old Stern days. God almighty. All right, 520-9710 and 888-520-9710. Jesus Christ, this is a tough audience, man. Guy comes in, he's a Vietnam vet, he talks about his play, he's a funny guy. He's had a heart attack, he's got three grandkids. And he tells joke after joke and story after story, and then you guys call him up and trash him. I mean, Jesus Christ almighty. Is there any respect for Vietnam vets, guys who put their life on the line for this country of ours? And then you young punks, you young sons of bitches call up and say, oh, F that guy, F him, F David Landsberg. He's not funny. Well, you know what? You guys can all kiss my ass. Funniest guy on the planet. John in Upland, you're on 97.1 Free FM.
David Landsberg? More like David Unfunniesberg. Dude, I'm so high right now. I like to get high and listen to your show. And that was not even remotely interesting, Tim.
Wow.
Well, you're losing your edge, man.
All right, dude. Maybe I am. David and Pomona, you're on 97.1 Free FM.
Hey, Timmy.
Yeah.
My name's David, dude.
Hey,
I'm,
David,
I'm
how are you?
I'm ashamed to be named David right now.
I'm sorry?
I'm ashamed to be named David right now. You have this you're supposed to have a funny show.
Well, you on the comments here, it says you're also Jewish and you're proud of David Landsberg. You just lied to get on the air?
Yeah, I mean, because, Tim, I want to tell you straight how it is. We're trying to listen to the show and it's supposed to be funny. I mean, it makes me want to turn to, you know, the wave or something.
Ugh. Well, turn the wave on.
Well, but I want to listen to
kiss
you,
my
but
ass.
I want to listen to funny stuff.
Get the Christ out of here, you sons of bitches, you young punks. If I had the ability, I could have jumped through the phone and take care of y'alls. Aaron in Riverside, you're on 97.1.
Dude, the only thing great about your show tonight is that Whitman wasn't there.
Okay.
If I wanted to talk to a homeless Vietnam vet guy, I'd go talk to the guy in the corner with a cardboard sign, man. That was horrible. I thought this was
Jesus
a comedy
Christ.
Show. I think I'm going to get up early and listen to Ryan Seacrest.
Oh, all right. There's a trend happening here, man, and I have no control over it. I thought that this is the most fascinating dude on the planet. I love David Landsberg. And I think an act of love is probably a terrific play. And that guy deserves a lot of respect for being a Vietnam vet. Oh. Tom, you're on 97.1 Free FM. How are you?
Hello, Tim.
Hey, Tom Likas. How are you?
Tim, where are the yucks? Where are the jokes? You and David Landsberg have no material. You have no jokes. That was so uninteresting. I'd rather just listen to a replay of my show. If that's the kind of material you're going to put on after my show, you bitch.
I give up. I thought David Landsberg was a great guest. Evidently, you know what we're going to do the next hour? We're going to talk to guys who picked a major booger today. Did you pick the biggest booger of your life today? Why don't we do that for an hour? How dare you? How dare you? Brian and Fontana, you're on 97.1 Free FM. How are you?
Hey, my name's Brian, dude.
Hey, Brian.
A couple of years ago, I had a girlfriend, and I signed checks for, you know, you're a couple of guys that I admire, but, I mean, you got to have this guy Landsteen?
Landsberg.
Well, I mean, dude, you're a couple of guys that admire you.
Thank you.
And, you know, Whitman, I liked Whitman.
Thank you.
Bonaducci, Likas. I mean, you lose my
All right, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to design the show for guys like you. So here's the topic for the next hour. What's the longest fart you ever had? In seconds, what's the longest fart you ever had?
Probably about 13 seconds.
13 seconds. Wow, that's interesting. That's a big fart. Did it smell? Was it like radical? Was it like a radical fart?
I was real proud of it.
Yeah. All right. Did you?
When's
the last time you lit a fart on fire?
I did that actually earlier today.
And that was pretty cool?
It's always cool. It's awesome.
Actually, to be honest with you, I actually find that interesting. And if David Landsberg maybe lit a fart, maybe the audience would have enjoyed that. All right, get the hell out of here, you young punks. This guy goes over to Vietnam and defends everyone's right here to talk about anything they want on the air. And then none of you have the balls to trash him to his face. And then the guy leaves and you guys all go ballistic. Well, F you and F everybody. Gina Grad's coming up with the news. Gina, what's on the news?
Well, Adam Carolla is still dancing with the stars. And this just in,
uh-oh,
motorcycles are dangerous.
And
more after the break.
All right. Also, the David Letterman top 10 list coming up. The top 10 signs that New York City is becoming more polite. I got to get a cigarette. It's Tim Conway Jr. live on 97.1 Free FM. I'm here. I'm queer. Get over it.